Well, I'll tell you up front, when we set out to ask different people to speak in the summer, I was not planning to be one of them. In fact, I was like, Lord, people have heard parts of my stories, different ones here. If they've been in a Bible study with me, they've definitely heard parts of it. And so, but the Lord and how he orchestrates things, this was the one date that nobody could speak on. So I kept asking the Lord to fill it with somebody else. And he kept graciously closing the doors. And so finally, after prayer, I was like, are you wanting me to share? And so, as God orchestrates things, that is what I sensed the Lord was having me to do. So it's been fun to see how the Lord has, I think for everybody who has shared, how it makes us really have to sit down with the Lord and recount God's goodness in the midst of different things. So it has really been a sweet treasure for me this summer to recount in my own preparation for this, the goodness of our God. And so what I want to do is, there's three parts of my story. And so so I'll just kind of jump right in. I mean, there's way more to my story. And those of you who know me, I could talk about any one part of it for 55 minutes, which means I should probably put my phone here so I know what time it is. I'm very good at filling however much time I have. So I want to kind of share three parts. So the first thing I would say, I will start off in the fall of 1999. I was living in Fort Worth, Texas. I was a seminary student at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. And actually, not fall of 99, fall of 97, sorry, even a little earlier. I was working at Texas Christian University. It's Christian in name only. Like many Christian schools, it was started as a Christian school, but is no longer. But it's an excellent university. And I was hired to live and work in the sorority houses. So I was a Southwestern seminary student surrounded by believers. And then I would come back to my sorority houses where there were a lot of believers, but there was also a lot of non-believers. And I worked there. And at the time, I had two sororities that I was over. The way they were set up, the sororities were in basically like dormitories. And so they weren't houses like in other universities. And so I worked for the university and made sure that they behaved and followed our, at least while they were on campus. And so, but I was hired in the middle of a semester. And so that's a strange time to start. And so, but the good thing about that is I had to go into their chapter meetings and introduce myself. And so I went to the Kappa Alpha Thetas first and introduced myself. And then I went to the Delta Gammas. And my apartment was actually in their sorority house. So I went into their chapter meeting and stood up and said, hi, I'm Christy Herrick. I'm work for the university. I'm the one who's living in your house. And said I was a Southwestern seminary student and just said, if any of you ever wants to talk about Jesus, I love that. And if not, if you just have maintenance issues, come see me, kind of a thing. And so right after that, the very next day, there was a knock on my door. And, you know, I was still getting used to my job. And I was like, hello. And there was this cute little blonde, real petite, and she's like, my name is Kim Jones. I'm a brand new Christian, and I think you need to teach me everything you know. And it was like, okay. So I was like, come into my apartment. And so she had grown up in a Christian home, but her parents worked for, or her dad worked for Aramco oil company. So they lived in Saudi Arabia. So they moved a lot. She had been in boarding schools and other stuff. So for her, church was kind of spotty. Even though her parents were believers, it had never been her relationship. And so I don't really remember how she became a believer. You would think that I would keep track of that. But all I know is she had become a believer the week before I moved in. And she said, I need you to tell me everything you know. And so we started going to church together. I went to a church called Wedgwood, and what we were known for is our pastor would always say, once a wedgie, always a wedgie. And we would cringe because he would say it every Sunday, but we would find ourselves saying it. It was ridiculous. So So I was kind of nervous about taking her there to hear a pastor say Wenchawedgie. But she came, and it was fun because here I am in my final year of seminary, and then she would come in and ask me Bible questions. But she was also new, so everything felt, I mean, she had questions about the most basic things. But she would knock on my door, and one of my favorites is she knocked, and she came in, she goes, "Who are the Gentiles?" And I was like, "What?" And then I'm like, "Show me where you're Gentiles." And so I was like, okay. We are definitely at ground zero here. So I'm like, "You're a Gentile, you know." So, and then another one of my favorite times in those first few months, she knocked on my door and I said, "Come in." It's kind of a normal thing. That's Kim who's knocking. And she was like, "Okay, this Paul guy, I don't like him." I was like, "Wait, what?" And she goes, "He's against women. I don't like him." And I'm thinking, he like wrote most of the New Testament. We've got to come to terms with this. But I was like, "Let's just give him some time. We'll come back to Paul." Because at this point, she'd become a believer, but she would have still told you at that time she was a feminist. She was, I mean, you pick everything that you feel like is opposite of being a follower of Christ. And she was still in that camp. She was slowly learning some different things. And when I say feminist, I mean like tear the bra off, swing it. I'm a woman, hear me roar. So for her, Paul was a huge like, whoa, what is this? And I'm like, no, let's just keep reading the word. We're gonna make it through this, and you will actually like Paul. You better, you know, kind of thing. So it was fun. We would sit in church and we would sing hymns, and I learned to listen to words of hymns differently because I knew she was going to ask me questions. She was like, "What's an Ebenezer? What are we raising? What is this thing?" And so it really made me pay attention to everything that we were singing. And so it was a fun time in my walk too, because everything I was learning in seminary, I was like, and here's somebody I have to tell it to, you know? So I need to know this, not just for myself, but for somebody else. So sweet time. So this was all in like an October to a December. And at the end of December, she came and she goes, "We need to start a Bible study in the Delta Gamma house." I was like, "That is great." The way it worked, I worked for the school, so I could not initiate a Bible study. But if one student wanted it, I could be a part of it. So I was like, "Yes, let's do this thing." And it was interesting because she said, "Here's what we're going to pray. We're going to pray that every Delta Gamma hears the gospel." Now, y'all, I will tell you, I'm ashamed of this, but in my head, I'm like, "Oh, honey, that's not going to happen. Some will hear, but probably not all." I mean, I didn't say it, but I was like, "Ooh, a new believer. She's enthusiastic." And so, but I was like, "But yes, definitely, we'll pray that some hear." So fast forward the next semester, we started the Bible study. And it was quite a collection of people. I will just tell you, she was a new believer. There was three young ladies who were strong believers. And then there was a host of others who were just kind of checking us out. And one girl, I love her, Iran is her name. She's from Colombia, South America. And she thought I was training to be a nun. That's what she thought seminary was. So she would come to Bible study she was trying to think, was I converting people to be nuns? She just couldn't get it. And so the best part, though, is she, when we would meet, we would close in prayer. And I would say, "Anybody can pray." And what? She was like, "Anybody?" And I was like, "Well, yeah." And so, well, Iran prayed. And it was one of those, as she prayed, all of us who are believers, you know, your eyes start opening like, what do we do? And so, but it was fun. It was a fun, sweet time. So fast forward, Kim, like I said, she went to church with me. She graduated in the spring of 98, and the Lord took her on a mission trip. And she served overseas for a semester. And so fall 99, I'm still working at the sorority house. And my friend Kim has come back to go to seminary. And she's going to lead the Bible study. Yay! And so, and the fun thing about it is when she came back like that first week in September, and a fall of 99. And she's like, "Christy, I know what I want to teach. And I was like, what do we want to teach? Because I had told her before she left, this is what you're going to do. You're going to be in charge of it. She goes, I love Paul. She goes, I want them to understand his journey to become a believer, and then let's just walk through his life. And I was like, absolutely. And then I was like, you have no idea. I don't even know if you remember that you hated him. So kind of thing. So fall of 99, we started our Bible study at the Delta Gamma House. And by this time it had grown. And we had a large group of really strong believers and new believers who were coming. And our first study was on Tuesday, September 14th, 1999. And that's probably a weird date to remember, but I'll tell you why I know it in just a few minutes. So she led, and it was so sweet. She just met, I mean, there was a lot of new freshman girls. She was sharing what we were going to be doing. And so we didn't actually jump into Paul's life. She was just kind of laying the foundation. Then she went to Psalm 139. And she went around to each girl, I mean, point blank, and said, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. And she just talked to each girl very directly. And she talked about how in that passage it goes on, it says how the Lord has ordained the number of our days. And she was basically calling them, so don't waste a single day with the Lord. And so, sweet Bible study time. Well, when it was over, she and I were talking, and she was asking if I was going to go to church on Wednesday. And I said, well, I can't because I had to work. We would have a beginning of the year meeting with all of the resident assistants in the sorority houses. And so I had to be there. I was in charge of that. And so the next morning I woke up and I wrote in my journal, I was mad that I woke up with a sore throat. Isn't that a beautiful way to start your day with the Lord? But I was like, this is ridiculous. I have a sore throat and I have to work and blah, 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 blah. Little did I know that would have been the best, worst news of my day if it had stopped there. Because on September 15th at my church in 1999, we had a shooting. And this was, you know, just a few months after Columbine. So this was so rare. The shooter had come into our church, and that night was a See You at the Pole rally. So it was a lot of our youth group and another youth group who had gathered. And so the adults had moved to the fellowship hall so the students could be in the sanctuary. And my friend Kim had gone to the sanctuary because she loved music. So she wanted to be in the concert. And without going into too much details, that night there were 7 people who were killed. There were 7 who were wounded, and then the gunman killed himself. And my friend Kim was one of the ones who was killed. And so what I would say to you as a young person in my 20s, that rocked everything in my world. That was not in my frame of things to be concerned about. That was not even on my radar. And so this is a church that I was a Sunday school teacher. I sang in the choir. It was a Baptist church, so I taught GAs, if you know what that is. It's the Wednesday night. And so, in fact, I had some girls that I had been with since third grade who were now seventh graders, and this was their first youth event who were in this event. So it was difficult. And I won't go into, I don't want to spend too much time on this part of the story, but what I would tell you, it was a blur. Kim's family, like I said, lived in Saudi Arabia, and I was the connector for her family. So she also had a freshman brother who was starting TCU who was not a believer and would normally have been out drinking, but he was at the library. And so the Lord orchestrated me just to be that point person in the midst of it. So long story short, those next few days were quite a blur. And the reason we sang It Is Well, that was the first song we sang in our church the Sunday after this happened on a Wednesday. So I was like, please let us sing it because it's so, it's a sweet gift from the Lord. So in that time, I will tell you, the Lord did some beautiful things. And some that, I mean, so many more than I'm going to even share. But one of the things he did was all the Delta Gammas gathered in the sorority house. And the Bible study girls stood up and shared the gospel with the entire Delta Gamma house. So they all heard. So, sweet gift of the Lord. Her brother became a believer, not right away, but because of this, the impact of this. The Lord brought a dear friend to show up at my apartment the very next morning. I didn't even know I would need her, but oh, wow. It was a gift from the Lord. So in the midst of that, what I would say, it was the first time my faith was on rocky ground, shaky ground. But it was strange because out of all of my church, we had about 500 people, which I thought was a mega church. So I'd grown up in churches of 100, so 500 was huge. For whatever reason, I became one of the four or five people who were constantly interviewed by the media. And so it was a strange thing. It's a strange thing, but I had all my right answers. God is in control. God is with us. Our hope has not wavered. And God is good and he's on his throne. I mean, I could say it over and over, but I would go home and go, I don't believe any of it. You weren't there. I don't like this. How dare you do this? Why my friend? Why my church? You know, as if I would be okay if it had happened somewhere else. So this was my struggle. Up front every day, God is in control. You are good. Every night, I don't believe you. Every Bible study, girls, trust in the Lord. Every night, I don't trust you. That was where I lived from September to December. And then December, I got asked to speak at a church's in the middle of their Christmas program. They wanted me to come and share the goodness of God in the midst of tragedy for 7 minutes. And I'm long-winded, so you can imagine that. But I was also like, Lord, I can't. I'd said yes, because that's what you're supposed to do. But I was like, I can't. I can't do it because I don't believe it. And this is where the Lord was so gracious. Nothing audible, but it felt audible. It was as if the Lord said, Christy, come, sit and open my word. It's time you hear from me. And I don't know how I got there, but I landed on Psalm 62, and I honed in on verses 5 and 6, and I used the NASB at the time, so I learned it this way. Says, my soul wait in silence for God only, for my hope is from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I will not be shaken. Those two verses, y'all, those are what the Lord used to say, Christy, stop. I am big enough for all of this. I want you to fix your eyes on me. And so literally, I'm just going to read. This is what the Lord did with me. Wait in silence. My soul, wait in silence. And that's hard for a talker. Even with me and God, I'm a talker. I talk way more than I listen often. And he was like, wait in silence. Quit telling God what he was supposed to do. Quit telling God how he's now going to unfold this. Quit telling God that he made a mistake. You wait in silence. And it took a while for me to sit before the Lord and quiet my thoughts before him. But as I started to tell my soul to wait in silence, then it was like, the question is, but for who? Why am I waiting in silence? I'm waiting in silence for God only. And then it's like in that moment, the Lord was saying, Christy, it's not me and an answer. It's not me and a result. It's not me and the answer to why I allowed this. You are waiting for me. And so then I'm, okay, Lord. You know, it's one of those like, oh, okay. Because there's not an answer that will satisfy this side of heaven. But there is a God who satisfies. And so it was sit and wait in silence for God. And then I would ask my question, but why am I waiting for God? The next part of that verse. Because he alone is my hope. And it was as if the Lord was saying, Christy, your broken and confused heart is not going to be satisfied with some quick answer of why I did this, because you won't understand. I'm God. I know what I'm doing. You trust that I am your hope, period. So then we wrestled with that with the Lord. All this took a lot longer than this, you know. It wasn't like, oh, okay. You know, it would be like, what does this really mean? And then it was the question of, how are you my hope? How are you my hope, Lord? And that's that next part of the verse. He alone is my rock, my salvation, my stronghold. And so I wrestled a lot with that in terms of understanding life is unsure. For the first time in my life, church was unsafe. Lives could be lost in an instant. I'd never experienced that before. And so it was as if God was saying, yes, it's shaky, but I'm not. I am always this firm rock foundation. I have secured your salvation. I am your stronghold. Other versions say your fortress, where you run to. And the Lord used that in the midst of this. And then the last part, this one's kind of funny, because then it says, he promises, I will not be shaken. And so the crazy part about this is, y'all know what a weeble wobble is? Okay. Some of you who are younger may not, but I grew up where we played with weeble wobbles. And as soon as I got to this part of the verse, that's all that popped in my head. Is I just remember the mom, she had red hair, the weeble wobble. And you know, the whole point of it, you can weeble and you wobble, but you don't fall down. And so it's like, you feel like you're about to, but it is, in that moment, it was as if the Lord was saying, Christy, you are feeling like you are stuck in the muck and the mire, but I've upheld you by my outstretched right arm. And you will not be shaken to the point that you can't get up in my strength. And it was so sweet. So now every time I see a weeble wobble, this is, it's a weird thing, but I go right to this verse. And so, but I will tell you, in that moment of months of struggle, I still have questions. I still kind of wish it wasn't part of my story. There are pieces of it that I'm like, God, I just don't like it. But when I fixed my eyes on the Lord, and I saw that he alone was my hope. He's my rock. He's my salvation. He's my stronghold. I can trust him. Even with this most difficult thing that I'd ever walked in so far in my life. And I can declare that he's good. That he's trustworthy. He was present even when I was not wanting to hear him. He was there with me, girding me. Holding me by his outstretched hand. So I went and I shared that in a much shortened, condensed version. And that was really a turning point because it was the Lord basically inviting me back to know him deeper in the midst of my struggle, and that he can handle my questions. But he's also saying, but I'm not necessarily going to give you the answers. I'm your answer. Rest in me. And so the Lord worked. And so, but what I would also tell you is he introduced me to a passage of scripture that has been a mainstay in all of my life. So part two of this story is these sets of verses, how the Lord has used them. I would say in that first, that was a trial that really came out of nowhere in my mind, and it was intense. And the Lord met me with a passage of scripture. And now I would tell you this next part of my story in just these few minutes. There's another part of my story that has been in seasons a trial. And other times it hasn't felt like a trial. But it's been a long term. and it hasn't had a resolution the way I would like. And yet the Lord has met me with these same verses. And that is, I'm single. I'm about to be 50 in a few months. And singleness can be very difficult. But I would also say this, singleness can be beautiful as well. Just like marriage has its hardships and it's beautiful. It's not a, this is worse, this is better. It just is what it is. But this is what I have walked through. And I want you to hear how the Lord has met me in it. And everybody's singleness is different. So just because I share this, don't go then find another single who's 50 and go, oh, I know what you went through. No, they may have had a completely different experience than I have. And so, but what I would tell you for me is that in my 20s, I was quite hopeful. You know, dated some cute little fellas, even thought one might be the one, but then he wasn't. But I was still hopeful. I was like, that's okay. There's more fish in the sea, you know. But then as I got to 29, I was like, oh, Lord, this isn't planning out how we thought. Remember when I was 25 and had a boyfriend, it felt much more like we're moving in a normal direction. 29, approaching, the 0 and the 5 birthdays are always, they're tricky for single people most of the time. So if you have single people in your life who are getting near a 0 and a 5, just kind of remember, those can be tricky ones. Not for everybody, but for many of us. So I got through the 20s. I was starting a new job at 30. So I was like, that's okay. I've moved to a new state. I'm just going to be a girl who gets married in her 30s. That is not, people do that now. That's okay. So I moved, and so my 30s, I was hopeful. This is the decade. And I would plot in my head, okay, if I meet a guy when I'm 31, if we date a year or 32, I'll get married by 32 and a half, which means I can have kids around 34. Okay, so I won't be an old mom. You know, that was kind of my thinking. Well, 30s, we're approaching the 5 birthday, the 35, and it's like, oh no, now I'm going to be an old 30. Which is so funny to me now that I'm in my 50s, or about to be in my 50s, thinking I thought I was old in my 30s. But I felt old because, listen, even in churches we do this. Singles, they're young singles, then you become an older single when you hit 30. We don't do that with married people. We don't say to you, oh, you're a young lady, and then, oh, you're 30, now you're an old married person. No, but we do that to singles. And it adds an extra layer of, like, I'm old at 30, you know? So anyway, so 30 came, and here's what I would say about my 30s. I bought a house by myself. It's not how I dreamed it would be. I faced a health challenge for the first time by myself. Not how I thought it would be. Church was hard. Because now I was an old single. And some churches don't know what to do with old singles. Again, at 30, you know. I realized I'm not going to get married in my 30s. I worked in a college setting. And here's what happens in college settings. I'm engaged! You're 20! And I would be thrilled and excited, but it was like, Lord, you every week, really? We are, and you knew every year you would get new ones of like, oh, yay, you have waited so long. You have struggled with the singles. Yes, I know, you're 21, you know, kind of thing. And so, but I mean, I could, thankfully the Lord worked, I could be genuinely happy. But when I would have that 5% of, that's when it was like, Lord, why am I having to work with people who are getting engaged all the time, who've waited so long at 20 and 21? And then here's what would happen with me. In my 30s, I started to try to figure out why I was single. If I get thinner, maybe I'll get married. Maybe if I could tamp down this personality, I might be a little more appealing to a godly guy. Maybe some sin in my past, this is now why I'm not getting married. And so that would play at different seasons. It even led to, did God really love me as much as he loved somebody else? And why does he have me on this path? It doesn't seem fair. And why does she get to get married to that godly guy? And I know her. She does not love you, Jesus. But yet she's getting the perfect scenario. And so this is where these verses would enter in again. Because I don't want to say to you that that every day of being single was hard. It wasn't. The vast majority of being singleness is just living life and loving the Lord and walking. But boy, when that 5% hits you, oh, it hits hard. And that's where the Lord would say, Psalm 62, 5 and 6. And I would run back to him, my soul wait in silence, not for husband, not for anything else, but for God only. My hope is not in marriage. My hope is in God. Being married doesn't make me more secure. That's in the Lord. I'm not going to be shaken in the midst of this. So then 39 came. Bum, bum, bum. The 40th birthday. I will tell you right now, I had just started at Southeastern Bible College a few years earlier, and I was having none of it. My coworkers, hey, 40th. I'm like, we are not even acknowledging this. This is not what we're going to do. And it's because I will tell you this, for me, 40 wasn't just that I wasn't married. It was, I'm not going to have kids. And I can't lament that publicly. Married people who are infertile can, but single women can't. So it was hard. There was a lot of my soul wait in silence, not for kids, for the Lord. It also meant that not only was I not going to have kids, but my mom would not have a granddaughter who looked like her daughter. So I felt guilty. And I felt very sad for my parents that my mom would not get to experience that. And I felt guilty, which led to, you're not good. Then Psalm 52, or 62, 5 and 6, so I'd come back, sit before the Lord. Then it would be questions, these still come up, but they're not silly, they're very real. But then it was like, well, if I can't have kids, who's going to take care of me when I'm old? I mean, so then it's like I would barter with my nephews and nieces. Okay, you can have all my money if you will promise to take care of me when I'm old. I've secured my oldest nephew, so he's mine. I've told my sister, you don't get him. So, because my sister's married and can't have kids. So she's walked through this from a different side of things. So we only have three we're pulling from. And so it's like, which one can we trust? And, you know, kind of stuff. So we both wanted the oldest, but I got him. So when he got married, I secured it with her too. I'm like, you do understand. I know you'll take care of your parents, but you also inherit me. So we're all on board right now. So they get good Christmas presents. Anyway, so the 40s, it has been a different kind of season as well. And as I'm approaching 50, I'm sure 50 is going to have its own set of issues that just come up with life. But I say this to you because for me, this has been an ongoing. And the Lord has been good. When I have the scariest moments of it, he takes me back continually to Psalm 62, 5 and 6. And he says, Christy, you wait in silence for me, not a husband, not for a safety net. Because I used to say, well, if I can't get married, then make me rich. So, because then I'm like, because then I can have all that money to make sure I'm in a good nursing home. You know, and so I work in Christian ministry. Hello, this is, you know, I worked in Christian colleges. That's not how that works. And so, so all of that was me trying to figure out how to create my own safety versus trusting and waiting on God. And so God has said, no, you wait in silence for me, not for me plus, for me. And then he reminded me, Christy, I am your hope. I love you. I gave my son for you before the foundation of the earth. I declared you were mine. And I went on a rescue mission. And I transferred you from the domain of darkness into my kingdom. You can trust me. I'm your source of hope. And then again, he alone is my rock, my salvation, my stronghold. And I think what God would say in those moments is he was saying, I have not withheld the most important thing from you. I have given you me. And so whatever you think you need, or whatever fears that you have, I am enough. I will be your rock in the midst of it. I am your stronghold. I am your safety net. And I'm the better safety net than any other safety net you can construct. And so rest in me. And then that last part, I will not be shaken. And I had to laugh because I shared this with some singles in their 30s. They're old singles, you know. I said, singleness doesn't kill you. You don't die being single. And so for me, it was like, I will not be shaken. That was God saying, Chrissy, you're not going to die from this. This is not a death sentence. This is my good plan A for you. This is not me, oh, I forgot to make her a husband. Oh, too bad, you know. Or he messed up and so she just doesn't get one. No, it was God saying, this is my plan. Singleness is not to be abhorred or feared or dreaded. It has its own struggles. But it's as if he was saying, but I'll hold you, Christy. Through each one of them, you keep your eyes fixed on me. So I wish I could tell you singleness has been smooth sailing always. It has not been. I wish I could tell you that every time I've shared with somebody my victories in singleness, that usually about 2 days later, I'm laying in my bed going, I wish I was married, you know. Usually it's when I have to take the trash out. Let's just be honest. Or when my car breaks down. That's when I'm like, oh, that's when I need a man, you know, kind of a thing. So, but even I will just tell you the third part of my story, and this one's really short. So this last week, actually it's been since July 2nd or 3rd, my dad got COVID. And he's done really well with COVID. I mean, he's been sick. He's got the brain fog. That's the weirdest thing is your dad who's snappy, who now is, you're like, hello, do you know what day it is, kind of thing. But in the midst of that, last week, his COVID is, they've given him in pretty clear. They're just watching things, but he's good. It messed with some other health issues that he's always had. And they're not life-threatening, but they made us go to the emergency room 6 days out of 7 last week. Because you can't go see the specialist because you have to be further out, you know, in terms of being clear from COVID. So it highlighted, I'm single. If I had a husband, I could cry on his shoulder and he could, you know, take care of something. And then it was the, oh, my dad, I don't want to lose my dad. He's the one man who loves me. And this is what the Lord did. Psalm 62:5-6. And Hannah's living with me right now temporarily. She even texted me one day, read your verse. And here's how the Lord has met me. Again, Christy, Christy, Christy. Your soul, you need to wait in silence. Don't tell me how I need to unfold the plan with your dad. Don't tell me what I need to do, because I was. Okay, God, here's what you need to do. When he goes to the ER, they need to, you know, as if I'm a doctor and know stuff. But I am prescribing to the Lord how he's going to unfold this. And the Lord was like, no, you wait in silence for God only. Not God and an answer from a doctor. Not God and an appointment from a specialist. Not God and anything else. And that took a while, but we got there. Then we went to the next part of the verse. Why? Because my hope is from him. My hope is from the Lord. However he unfolds the plan, my hope is from him. My hope is not in my dad, who I love dearly. My hope is not in a husband who could be beside me carrying me through this. My hope is not in a doctor saying, here's the news. My hope is from God, period. Why? Because he alone is my rock, my salvation, my stronghold. My dad knows the Lord. One day he will die. I pray it's a long time from now, but one day he will. And I will be reunited with my dad at some point. I don't want it, period, but I don't want it sooner. But it's in the Lord's hands. And the Lord has been a good husband to me. He has let me cry on his shoulder. He has let me say crazy things and then looked at me and said, oh, I still love you. Now we need to go do this. He has strengthened me. He has encouraged me. And the last part of that verse, I will not be shaken. I felt like I was very shaken by the sixth trip to the ER. I was like, this is ridiculous. Lord, we've got to do something. And then it was sweet because it's like the Lord's like, you haven't fallen flat on your face, have you? I've upheld you through this whole thing, and I'll continue to do it. Now run to me, press into me, rest in me, trust me. I'm still good. I'm still the one who's in control. I love you, period. And so that's how the week ended last week, not knowing that there would be a third part to this story when I had started preparing it, but how sweet and kind of the Lord that in my preparing for this, he was preparing me to walk through a very difficult season that would bring up again my singleness, but would also bring up fears that I have as just a daughter, fears that I have about being single and alone. And the Lord said, I'm enough. I've met you in a situation back in 1999. I've sustained you all these years, and I'll continue to do so. Just keep your eyes fixed on me. So as I finish, a little bit over, but as I finish, I would say to you, I don't know what anchor verses the Lord has for you. These are my anchor verses. You're welcome to share in them and use them too. But I would encourage you to spend time before the Lord and ask him to really give you verses that are your landing place. When you can't think of any other verses or you don't know where to go, but that remind you that he's everything. It's not he plus, it's just him. Because he is worth it and he is good. And so, as a side little note to the rest of the story on my dad, the Lord has given us favor with his urologist, and he's seeing the doctor today at 11:15. And just from talking with the nurse, who I told her yesterday on the phone, I was like, you are an answer to prayer. I don't think she knew what to do with that. But I was like, you are an answer to prayer. And we'll see what the Lord has. But the Lord has been gracious. He is doing well. This is a weird thing to say. The COVID was scary, but the other stuff was scarier, if that makes sense. Now, COVID would have been scarier if he had had other stuff with it. So I don't want to doubt it, just his particular situation. But the Lord has been very good in all of it. So, but if you can keep praying for Georgie. So it's been good. And here's a fun little side note, and then I'll close in prayer. When my dad, like I said, he has brain fog. And so on one of our trips to the ER, because my mom, she can't drive very well. If she turns her head too fast, she can get vertigo. So she can drive, but it's better if I do. And so, especially once he had reached the 14 days where I could be around him. And so, anyway, so we were in the car and we were coming back from one of the visits. And I said, Dad, are you, because he's not able to read right now. He just can't. You know, kind of keep it together. And I said, Dad, are you able to bring up verses? And he said, I can't bring up verses, but I can remember the truths behind the verses, that God is for me. He cares for me. He is with me. And he goes, so whatever it may look like, I know this. And so I was like, okay, that's good. So, as of yesterday, he can remember verses, and he's doing better that way. So I pray that this would be an encouragement to you, you know, that this has just been part of my story, but the Lord has been good, and but he's good because he is who he is, not because he's given anything or because don't like that he's withheld something. He is just good, and he is the sustainer. And you've heard that through each person who shared this summer, that we've all walked things that we wish weren't parts of our stories, but yet the Lord has used them to grow us and shape us, and he's been the one consistent theme through all of our stories. He is enough, and he's good. Let me pray, and we will be done. Then I do have one announcement afterwards, so. God, we thank you that even though we may not understand why you allow hard things to come through your hand to our lives, with illnesses, with things that you may withhold, through hardships, through unexpected situations, God, keep our eyes off of those circumstances and our eyes fixed on you, because it's in you that we see a God who is present. That is the promise. You are present with us. You uphold us by your outstretched right hand. You are near to the brokenhearted. You will give us strength for the day's journey. God, keep our eyes fixed on you. Silence our minds from playing out the what if game and the thinking of how we would plan out our lives. Help us to rest in what you have for us, and help us to see your good provisions. God, we do love you, and we pray that you would be with us as we walk this journey with you that is full of sweetness, but also the bitter. In both times, help us to be anchored to you. And so we pray and ask this in your son's name. Amen.